Welcome to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello and welcome to the Keystone Kickoff Show. I'm Jim Galante. He is Andy Shea. Andy, I am really looking forward to today's show. I think we're going to have lots of fun today.
Are we? We might.
You're taking that as a bit of like a warning, aren't you?
Maybe. I'm good. I always am prepared to defend the island on which I implanted myself.
All right. Well, you're going to have to do that today. You know, I've been talking about the draft for the last week or so. We talked about it in preparation for it. Now we've been reviewing it. So this is kind of last show of the week. This is probably our final. We'll put a bow on the draft. Take a good hard look at the Penn State players who went in the NFL draft. Did they go too high? Did they go too low? Did they go to the right team? What kind of NFL future are they going to have? And any conversation about Penn State players and that type of conversation, it starts and ends with Drew Aller, right? I'm not sure there's a more polarizing player on the team or during the James Franklin era, correct?
No, they were tied at the hip. They were joined together at the hip, and did they define the James Franklin era?
Yes. Yeah, I
mean, college football semifinal, chance to play for a national championship, bad interception, right? 3-0 team, ranked top three in the country, bad interception. Bad performance on a big stage again.
That is all. That's going to be part of the legacy for both of those people, Drew Aller and James Franklin. As you put it, they were tied at the hip. And let's start this first quarter with our conversation. And I'm going to blindside you a little bit with this. One of our listeners, Craig, sent in a question. I think Craig was more making a comment than a question. And he's calling you out, Andy, and we're not going to hold out to ask Andy. We're going to start off right up front. Craig, quarter number one is dedicated to you. And here's what Craig said. He quotes Andrew P. Shea and says, "Drew Aller is undraftable." Your words prior to the draft. And then he says, "Drew Aller taken in the third round." Andy, your thoughts?
At the end of the day, I was wrong. He is a pure NFL project with some upside. Nothing more than that. He's a hope and a maybe. And the Pittsburgh Steelers, in the position that their quarterback room is, figured why not? They need options. They don't know what Aaron Rodgers is going to do. And they figured they took Will Howard last year, another project that they spent some time working on. They were prepared to take a project here. Let me quantify that a little bit. Look, this kid threw for more than 7,400 yards in a limiting offense capacity with no receiver help almost at all from the wide receiver position around him. 61 touchdowns. He only had 13 interceptions, right? He was a willing and engaging runner. The numbers were right. He has all the arm talent on the planet. Always has had it. Always will have it, right? And, you know, on pure talent, on pure God-given talent, he is the number one quarterback in this week, you know, blankety-blank class meet. This is a week weak quarterback class, and he clearly had the most arm talent. Now, that's the God-given abilities. They never disappear. It's just, can you harvest them and bring them up to another level? It's the intangibles that you look at. Performance on a big stage. We don't need to recount that in chapter and verse. He is not a leader by any definition or stretch of any imagination. Big stage, melts like butter on a hot street. How much is of his performance, not his talent, how much of his performance was taken into account for me saying, I think he's undraftable. He's not a leader, and he's got all the God-given talent, but he melts. He's not a big stage quarterback. I can't draft him.
That label, you know, the record in big games, can't change it. The record is bad. Terry Smith was interviewed earlier this week by a Pittsburgh radio station, and it was interesting to me. He kind of threw James Franklin under the bus. He said Drew Aller was a great talent, and the offense at Penn State was not designed to help him. And he brought up the example of the Oregon game. Penn State's offense was bad for, what, about three quarters, 3 points on the board. Then they're behind. They had to let them loose, essentially got into a two-minute offense. Boom, 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 touchdown, touchdown. And I think that was a very smart observation by Terry Smith. Yep. The reason why I think it was smart is Terry Smith agreed with me. So I could call him smart because of that. I've been saying for over a year, why don't they just sometimes let him go? Have you noticed how good Drew Aller was in a two-minute offense when they let him throw the ball vertically? Terry Smith brought up the Oregon game. I'll bring up the USC game from the prior season. They got down by multiple touchdowns. Second half, they had no choice but to unleash Drew Aller, and he was great. Now, I'm not saying that means he's going to be a great NFL quarterback. And you brought up, you know, the semifinal game against Notre Dame a year ago where no wide receiver had a catch in that game. And you brought up the late interception. To me, that wasn't the major crime. To me, the major crime was earlier in the game. They're knocking on the door inside the 5-yard line. Little easy pass. Andy, you would have completed the pass to Nick Singleton. And he ends up throwing it behind Singleton. They end up having to kick a field goal that cost them 4 points. I think that's probably a pass he's made 10,000 times accurately, but didn't make it at that point. So is that, I think that's in his head. Is that something that's coachable or not?
Does he have quarterback PTSD, and can he get his head back up and his confidence to a point where he matches his arm talent? Against Notre Dame, Jimmy, he was the worst player on the field for Penn State by a mile, beginning to end, minute one to minute 59 into 60. He was the single only reason, and that's not being harsh. He's the only single reason Penn State lost that football game. Look, here's what I'll say. The quarterback position was a weak class, right? I still would argue that even over Mendoza, he has more pure NFL or pure arm talent even than Mendoza has. Mendoza was in the right situation, right? Clearly. Yes. That he flourished, and that Drew Aller was clearly not in a situation that was anything right for him. His frustration and near exasperation that you saw is exactly what Terry Smith said. He was let down by his head coach and his offensive coordinator, particularly last year. Now, that Oregon interception was just horrific. You can't do that. But that offense was a meat grinder, and it had nothing suited to his finest skills. In other words, they didn't even pick one or two pieces of the best of what Drew Aller can be and make that part of the mark that part of the puzzle. They just simply eliminated and said, no, you have to fit inside this box, instead of making the box a little bit suited to him. They didn't even meet him a quarter of the way across the room. It was a meat grinder for him to quarterback that offense.
Andy, I saw something came up, talked about, we've talked about the wide receivers over and over again, to the point where you say you don't even want to talk about the wide receivers anymore, and I get that.
I can't.
How much of that was the factor in not bringing out the best in Drew Aller? Was it a factor in how they called the offense? Was it a factor in what he could accomplish?
I think it was a factor in how they called the offense, and they didn't show enough inherent trust to just let him do it anyway, right? Now, go back to his first year when he protected the football almost to the overzealous point. That was him making a conscious decision, and that was done with a little bit of intention. But they never sort of just said, well, if we're going to go down, we're going to go down with Drew taking his best shot. Now, they had some weapons in the backfield that they needed to use. But think about it, Jimmy. Did you ever get the feeling that in year two or year three last year before he got hurt, that the Penn State offense was saying, well, we might lose, but we're going to take our shot, and Drew Aller's going to be the one taking those shots? They never put that risk on the table for about 96 reasons, and we're not going to go into it, but they never really handed him the keys and said, we're going to either fly or flounder based on you doing what you do best, which is push the ball down the field and extend it vertically. They never were willing to say, I don't care how many interceptions you throw, the touchdowns can counterbalance that. Let's throw you into the ringer and say, go get one for us. They never did it. Never. Not even once.
And Andy, I hate to predict either way for him as an NFL player, good or bad. I just don't know what we're going to get. But I think the point you're making is they never let Drew be Drew in this offense.
Yeah.
And I think it became evident when you saw him when they were either behind or late in the half when he was running a 2-minute offense and he was just slinging the ball around. He ended up doing it very effectively. And I know the end of that Notre Dame game contradicts my statement, but I still feel like more often than not, he succeeded in that route. All right, Andy, that's it for quarter one. We got lots more to go. Stick with us.
Welcome to the new HVU Insider, Penn State football's fan scouting platform providing exclusive recruiting intel. The first of its kind platform giving Penn State fans an inside look at how the Nittany Lions identify, evaluate, and recruit the next generation of talent. Led by Mike B and powered by Penn State students, it's a new era of Penn State football under Coach Matt Campbell. You can sign up at happyvalleyunited.com. It's fast and free.
It's quarter number two on the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. It's quarter number two. He's Andy Shea. I'm Jim Galante. We're talking about Penn State players in the NFL draft last week. We spent the first quarter talking about Drew Aller. You know what, Andy? I think if we wanted to, we could probably do the entire show on Drew Aller. There's so many pieces to it. It's amazing. I'm just going to add one last note that I find interesting in the conversation. A lot of folks are saying, oh, it was an RPO. They had him running the ball. He really did not run the ball that often, okay? And actually, and you pointed this out in the first quarter, he actually did run effectively at times. I mean, he was a big guy, hard to get down. They got on third down some very big first downs with him running the ball. Again, I'm not advocating for that, but I'm just saying it was not nearly as bad as some people described it. All right,
good,
Andy.
Good, willing, and capable runner. Always has been, always will be.
Yes. All right, let's move on. There were actually several other Penn State players in the draft, Andy. Can you believe that?
Eight of them. Eight players drafted.
Which is very good, which is a little bit damning also. How could this be a 500 team when they had that many players drafted? By the way, the same number of players drafted as the national champion Indiana Hoosiers.
Correct.
And as long as we're going down that path, though, Ohio State had the most players drafted, had four players drafted in the top 11. And their two best players were not even eligible to be drafted yet. Julian Sain, the quarterback, Jeremiah Smith, the wide receiver, who is the best player in the country, Andy.
Yeah.
They could have had two more guys drafted in the top 11 if they went. How could they not win a national championship? Rhetorical question. I don't need an answer. Our topic is actually the rest of the Penn State draftees. I let myself get sidetracked. And let's just cover the easy one first. Vega Ioane.
Oh.
Is he a sure thing, Andy?
Oh. The Ravens killed me. I'm a Buccaneers fan. We were drafting 15. Vega was still on the board when the Ravens were on the clock. And I kind of knew they were going to draft him.
Yeah.
And my team did not we had much, much greater needs than guard. But I'm 300% sure that if Vega was sitting there at 15, my Buccaneers were 100% going to draft him. You can say, okay, well, we got the Miami defender that fell, right? Like he fell to
him.
If Vega falls, that's one of the five best players and the, without question and without debate, best player in his position in the draft that has. You have to dig deep to find a little bit. You're like, maybe you could question that. You have to get a shovel and dig for an hour before you find it. Surefire lock as an NFL player because he does nothing superior. He does everything outstanding, and that is what makes elite NFL players. It's good at the skill positions to have a superpower, not in the trenches. It's just the bigger, stronger, more athletic, and more balanced you are as a player, the better you are as a prospect. It just, Ravens got a great one. They needed it. It fits them. He suits the kind of game that they kind of play. We'll see under the new regime, but oh man, I was like, oh my gosh, Vega, are you going to be there 15? I'm a Bucs fan. And I'm like, oh my gosh. And then of course the Ravens drafted him.
Well, the Ravens picking Vega was like almost a sure thing. Every projection had him going there, a great fit, all of that. But it also brings up this other point. The NFL prioritizes different positions. Obviously, you got to do the quarterback, tackle, edge rusher. And the very best players in this draft were not in those positions.
They weren't. Correct.
It was the running back, Jeremiah Love. It was the safety, Caleb Downs. It was the interior offensive lineman, Vega Ioane.
Correct.
And, I think sometimes the NFL goes overboard with that prioritizing by position instead of just saying, oh, my God, this guy's a great player. Bring him on our team. So just collect great players and you'll draft well. All right, let's talk about some of the other players. And
sure.
I'm going to make this the more general question.
Sure.
Who was drafted too low? Who's the sleeper who went later than you expected and it's going to surprise people?
Yeah, I think in time it'll be, I think sometime in his first contract, it'll be Dany Dennis Sutton, right? You're getting info now that's dribbled out that the Packers, who eventually drafted him, I think it was, 120th? He was a fourth round.
Yes.
They tried to trade up to draft him in the third round. It's a difference of 20 picks, but they were like, we see this guy as a value. We want to trade up. They could not pull it off, and somehow he was still sitting there 20 picks later for them to scoop him up. Look, edge is a tough NFL position developmental-wise. J- Jimmy. If you watch it, it just takes more time and patience for real fruit to be harvested in that. Not many guys. I mean, look at Abdul Carter. I mean, I know it was a new position in college for him, but he was good, but not great, right? Chop Robinson, finally coming into his own last year, got injured, but you could see it, right? Like, it, they have to build a little bit more. He was a top 75 player who I think slipped. I don't think he fell. I just think he slipped. Production, production, production. That is what you're looking for at this position first. And tonight, Dennis Sutton, he has that in spades at the start of his NFL career as a young guy at that position. So in my mind, that the production is what you can't coach or put into him first. You can work on a lot of other stuff with these guys as you try and develop them slowly, because they just seem to develop slow, and I understand it because it's such a highlight position. He has that production already in spades. So for me, that makes him a steal at 120 for a top 75 player in my mind.
I agree with you. I was a big Denai Dennis Sutton fan, and I think there were a couple things that just they stand out in my head. The interception, I guess it was against Notre Dame. Defensive end falling back into coverage. Yep, so production. Athletic.
Production.
Boy, that. The other thing was, at the end of this season, the bowl game, where so many players chose not to play.
He played.
He played, and he played well.
He has these elements of greatness that you could see blossoming. If they blossom, he could be great, Jimmy. He has, gosh, he has so much tools. His production outshines everything, but he's good at setting the edge. There's just a lot. It's still going to be a slow development for him. Might have a little bit of help on the other side in a guy named Micah Parsons.
That might help him out just a tad.
Just a little bit. A healthy Micah will help the development of tonight, Dennis Sutton, but gosh almighty, I just think he could be a blooming flower in the NFL, because he just showed you every single thing and wore it on his sleeve about who he is and who he was.
I think Green Bay Packer game viewership is probably going to go up in central Pennsylvania. I'm going to lump together, Andy, the two running backs, the record-setting running backs. Nick Singleton went in round 5 to the Titans. Katron Allen in round 6 to the Commanders.
Yeah, no surprise. They were kind of drafted together. Nick Singleton, they were never top. They have some elements of top 3-round draft picks, but it's the running back position. It takes a unicorn to be a Jeremiah Love. So it's not as highly valued. So they were always going to be kind of in this position, round 5, round 6. They were always going to be kind of close together, because it's do you like potatoes or do you like potatoes, right? Like, yep. It doesn't matter. There's interchangeable parts into both of them. As a pure NFL guy, Nick Singleton has just a slightly higher upside, but there's a value that Katron Allen has that Nick Singleton doesn't. So it was which team saw them as the better value. And if Allen would have been drafted 20 spots before Singleton, would anybody have been surprised? No. They were going to be drafted close to each other no matter what. I think they're both capable NFL backs. I do think Singleton has a little more upside, but I think they're both capable of the way the NFL uses running backs today in a multi-back system, because they're able and willing blockers, capable, very capable, and they both have the ability to catch the ball out of the backfield. They're not third down backs, either one of them, but they're capable.
And you know what? I'm looking at the two of them. They each had a flaw that, again, running backs not valued in the NFL, as you pointed out, Andy. Mm-hmm. Nick Singleton coming off the injury.
Right.
Katron Allen, what? I've yet to see that 40-yard number from him. And
don't do it.
It's not going to be good. Now, I think Nick Singleton is in a better spot with the Titans to get a role in the NFL, like in college. It's multiple running backs now. You don't have one running back getting 98% of the carries. But Catron Allen goes into a crowded backfield in Washington. He may or may not make the team.
I think he will because he's a good. He could play special teams a little bit. He's a good football player. So I think that helps him. But I agree with you, 100%. Crowded house in Washington.
And, you know, that's unfortunate. Real quickly, Drew Shelton went in the fourth round. Zaki Wheatley in the fifth round. Zane Durant in the fifth round. You got less than a minute, Andy. Wrap up those three. Or Panthers point one out.
Panthers got a steal in Zaki Wheatley. Potential impact player. Has one more level of development. I think it's there. The best pick of the entire draft was the Cowboys taking Shelton, and I hate the Cowboys. Solid, solid pick in the fourth round. Just not flashy. Just he reminds me of Donovan Smith. He'll just show up. He won't be great, but he'll be capable and good, and he's a little and he's durable. So I like him.
That's an interesting call there, Andy. But I think where I definitely 100% agree with you, I hate the Cowboys. And they're in the same division as my team, so all the more I don't like it. All right, Andy, that's it for quarter two. Guess what's coming up? Ask Andy. We will do that right after this break.
Welcome to the new HVU Insider, Penn State football's fan scouting platform providing exclusive recruiting intel. The first of its kind platform giving Penn State fans an inside look at how the Nittany Lions identify, evaluate, and recruit the next generation of talent. Led by Mike V and powered by Penn State students, it's a new era of Penn State football under Coach Matt Campbell. You can sign up at happyvalleyunited.com. It's fast and free.
Let's get back to the action on the Keystone Kickoff Show. Brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. It's quarter three, which means it's time for your questions and we get to ask Andy. Let's get right to it, Andy, see how many we can get through. First question is from John in Kingston. And just a side note, separately from his question, John sent me a real nice email, Andy. He enjoys show. He recommended our show to all his buddies. So thank you for that, John. And John is also from my neck of the woods. He's up here in Northeast PA. He's talking about people who he knows that played against my Berwick Bulldogs. Going way back in history. Anyway, let's get to John's question. Once more, thank you, John, for the nice note. John says, Andy, I was really surprised that Catron Allen fell all the way to the 187th pick. I realize the NFL doesn't value the running back, but there were a number of running backs picked ahead of him. Does your time in the combine carry more weight than what you did in your four-year career?
No. Not necessarily, because in Catron's case, the tape didn't lie, right? He didn't run a 40. Jimmy, you said it, but last quarter, you didn't see a 40 time. You're not going to. Please know. His value doesn't lie in his breakaway speed, right? That's not where his value lies. He has so much more value beyond that. However, the NFL, you don't see a lot of 80-yard runs anymore, 76-yard runs. However, given the space to turn, the NFL values given the space to turn a 5-yard run into a 12-yard run, they value that, and they think speed is a factor in that. I'm sorry, Catron Allen can do that in traffic, and that's different, right? They're not used to. He's not slow, but he's football fast. He's not speed fast. And he's physical and demanding of a defense. And that is a little different package than the NFL likes to have inside their sort of comfort box. So that's why he fell to where he was. And him and Nick Singleton were drafted close together.
Andy, I'm going to answer the question a little different than you. John says, does your time in the combine carry more weight than what you did in a four-year career? I'm going to say, yeah, it does.
I think it because does.
Yeah, that's an easy way for NFL evaluators to evaluate a player. Oh, he doesn't run a 4.4, so, you know, right. We don't want that. It's tangible. It's definitive. If someone said, hey, why didn't you take him? Oh, he didn't run a 4.4. I'm not saying that's going to be the final word on his NFL career, but that's what happens. That's the way the system works. Okay, let's go to David in Reading. All right, Andy, go ahead. Andy signaling me, he had a final thought. Go ahead with it, Andy.
No, I just wanted to say, like, NFL GMs and drafts, when you're looking at these guys, and this fits Crachon out, they want to be able to say if he fails, what they could to be able to have a reason / excuse for why they missed, right? Like this year, for example, when did arm measurement become the Hakuna Matata of a NFL player? Like, oh, he's short arms. Well, he's got long arms. What the heck are you talking about? Watch the tape. That's all I wanted to say. It gives them an excuse.
These guys, it's no different than an industry. People work scared, okay? We do it that way because we always did it that way. Yeah. You could define it. It's black and white. His speed, hey, he's not fast enough. So if he does excel, you still got the excuse. Hey, we didn't take him because he didn't have the speed we were looking for. Exactly. All right, let's go to David in Reading. I don't recall getting something from David before, so I think it might be new. If that's the case, David, welcome. If it's not your first question, gee, I'm sorry, I forgot earlier ones. All right, David from Reading says, this year Penn State had 8 players taken in the draft. How many do you think will be taken next year?
Oh, all right, David, if this is your first question, touch them all. That's a good one.
Okay, Andy, I'm going to help you out here.
Number? What's the over-under number?
Well, let me give you a list of names to make it easy because I had the question ahead of time. I went and looked. Here are some names. Rocco Beck, Ben Brommer, the tight end, Anthony Donka, Tony Rojas, Marcus Neal, the safety, Zion Tracy, Carson Hansen, the running back, Chase Soule, the wide receiver, Davius Collins, Jeremiah Cooper, another safety. I just gave you 10 names, Andy.
So let's go half. Let's say the number's 4. Drafted. Drafted. Let's put the over-under at 4. I'm taking the under.
I would take the over.
I'm going under. Okay.
First of all, half of 10 is 5, by the way, but it was my understanding there'd be no math. Andy, so I get it because there's a lot of question marks here. Yeah. You know, Rocco Beck, no guarantee he'll be taken. Hansen, no guarantee. Collins, no guarantee. But I think there's enough guys. I think Brommer, the tight end, is definitely going to be drafted. I would think Donka would be drafted unless he just has an awful year. Correct. Tony Rojas, if he's healthy. I think Marcus Neal. So I think
Marcus Marcus Neal's like one of my 3. I think that guy
Neal, Rojas, Donka, and Brommer. I'm not saying sure maybe. Things, but I think all 4 of them will go. And then the rest of the guys, we just need 1 or 2 of them. And, you know, we can go from there. All right. Let's get to Randy in Binghamton who says, do we know what type of offense Matt Campbell is running? Have we ditched the RPO? The RPO only benefited Trace.
I think there'll be elements of RPO. I think you might see – I think you're going to see a lot. I think you'll see I think you'll see some 12. I think you might even see some 13. But I also think you're going to see some – I think 12 and 13 personnel, which is 1 running back, 2 tight ends, or 1 running back, 3 tight ends. I think you're going to see a good bit of that because you play to your strengths. I do think they're going to be a downfield throwing team more than Penn State fans have been used to the last 2 to 3 years. I think they're going to take more – they're going to trust Rocco to take more shots. They're going to let him do it. let the results be damned. And go ahead, Rocco. You're an experienced quarterback. Take your shots.
Well, in talking to multiple Penn State players this spring, Andy, I heard the word vertical used multiple times. And I think it will be pro style, but I think I'm going to use another word also, physical. And I think that will come from using multiple tight ends and potentially multiple running backs also.
I agree.
I think they want to physically be better than the other team. And you can do that with the multiple running backs and the multiple tight ends. All right, let's get to Chris in New York, who says, Andy, I know you say that you're not a Penn State fan, but over the years of covering the team, did you develop any favorite players? I'm asking Andy, but I suspect that Jim will chime in. They know us so well, Andy.
Yeah, so some players that I ran into one recently. It goes back a while. You remember Andre Campbell from Harrisburg, Penn State?
Yeah, I remember the name.
Not good, not great, good kid. I really enjoyed him. Trace McSorley was one. I just loved the way he played. I also enjoyed covering Mike Gesicki because he had to overcome a lot to become elite as a college tight end, and he did it all, right? Like, he overcame everything. I'll go back, way back in time. LeVar was fun, and Larry Johnson.
Oh, yeah. That year.
Running back. Yeah. That was something else. That was just something unique. And so those would be the guys that hit me right off the, you know, the top of my head.
Once more, you know, I have access to these questions ahead of time. This kind of question, it gives me a chance to think. And I started in my head to list names, and I began to realize there was a common theme through many of these. I love the physical players, the people who hit. Michael Robinson at quarterback.
Michael Robinson, good call.
Loved the way he played. I mean, he would run people over. But then also the safeties, like Jaquan Brisker. But I'll tell you a name. Do you remember James Boyd?
Yes.
Did anybody hit people harder than James Boyd did? Okay. How about the tight ends? I love the tight ends. It's Tyler Warren. It's Gesicki. It's Freiermuth. And I don't think I like them any better than the times that they would run people over. And here's one for you. I'm going to go back into the Wayback Machine, Andy. Matt Millen played while I was at Penn State.
There you go.
And I remember a series of downs where I think he jumped off sides, and you could just see he was not happy with himself. Next play, there's a punt. And he got through his defender right in front of him. He got through one of the protection guys. And then he did not tackle the punter. He did not go to block the punt. He, Andy, ran through the player. It looked like a car accident. You know, you ever see that when a car just hits someone and just obliterates them?
Yeah.
That's what Matt Millen did. That's the player that really just – I love those players, Andy.
Paul Posluszny was another one of my – I just – gosh, I enjoyed that guy so much. Dan Connor fit too. I love Dan Connor too.
Well, let me give one quick current story. We're doing these series out at the Pine Grove Hall where we get to interview players. This Wednesday, Vabu Touré interviewed him. He's a safety. He had a nice game in the Pinstripe Bowl against Clemson, and I was asking him about it and some of the plays, and he had a big hit, tackle for loss, and I'm like, what does that mean to you? How does that make you feel? I love being the hammer, not the nail. And I said, you know what?
That's
the common theme in all the players that I like at Penn State. They're the hammer, Andy. not the nail. All right, that's it for Ask Andy. Stick around. We got another segment to go.
Welcome to the new HVU Insider, Penn State football's fan scouting platform providing exclusive recruiting intel, the first of its kind platform giving Penn State fans an inside look at how the Nittany Lions identify, evaluate, and recruit the next generation of talent, led by Mike B and powered by Penn State students. It's a new era of Penn State football under Coach Matt Campbell. You can sign up at happyvalleyunited.com. It's fast and free.
We head to the home stretch in quarter number four on the Keystone Kickoff Show. Brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. I'm Jim Galante. He is Andy Shea. By the way, Andy, did I not tell you before we started that I thought it would be a fun show today?
You did.
And has it not been?
We're not done yet.
We're not done, but so far, so good.
It's been easy and breezy. Let's put it that way.
All right. Well, I'll go with easy and breezy. Let's move on. You know, we were talking even in the questions for Ask Andy, we were hitting on the draft. Let's put the past behind us, Andy. Okay. Let's look now at this current team. And I didn't know exactly how to title this segment. Using takeaways from spring, which may not be entirely accurate. You know, we're not the guys who are there at practice every day.
Correct.
You know, they had their spring practice. But we're following what's going on. We do see tidbits. We do see some of it. I want to kind of get from you your take on where this team sits now post-spring practice. As an example, I look at the quarterback position and I say, I am fine with Rocco back. He's healthy. He was doing the 7-on-7s. Yep, they're afraid to let him get hit in the, you know, full scrimmage, 11-on-11. I'm fine. I don't care. I'm locked in good with Rocco Beck. I'm scared of Rocco Beck getting hurt, though. What comes next? All right. That's my observation on the quarterback. How about anywhere else on the team? What are your thoughts on where they are right now?
So because you couldn't title it, I just kind of took my own little language. I'm like,
interpret it your own way, Andy. That's just fine.
What positions coming out of spring do I feel that I think they're fine at that position right now?
Okay.
Quarterback was one of them. They were third. I had three. It's third. I agree. I think he's the professional modern college football quarterback, Rocco. You could say, oh, well, it'll be different at Penn State for him. I don't think so. Not really. Maybe just a little, but maybe not enough to be measurable. The offense will be familiar. He's so seasoned that nothing's going to overwhelm him.
Healthy and whole. All his top receivers came with him.
Healthy and whole, you did put the caveat, and I agree with you. He is exactly who you expect him to be, and that will be more than enough for this team. That's exactly the way I feel about the quarterback position. I'll give you another one. I think the number one stability position on this roster for me is the running back position. It's not the star power that you had, but I think they've got three. I think they're going to use all three. I think we know a lot and more than enough about the three. And you're talking about Hanson, Peoples, and Quentin Martin Jr. We know and have enough body of work to know the performance abilities of this trio. Throw them all in a soup grinder and put them together. The strength of the three is greater than any one elite star running back. So I feel that this is the deepest, strongest, most stable position on the roster. It can absorb injuries. It can absorb a spate of lackluster performance by one guy. You understand what I'm saying?
Yep. Like,
every question that you might throw up, I feel that this trio can kind of answer the bell. So that was one. My second position that I think – there was three. Quarterback was one of them. The other one I feel strongly about is in a good spot is the linebacker position. The two ISU transfers have a lot to do with that. Evan Bacon. I think Tony Rojas returning from injury is a bit healthy and whole. Take Tony Rojas and put him in there. You give DC Lynn options and you give him mix and match packages that he can be multiple in many different ways with his front and the back because of the stability of the trio and what they can do in a mix and match formula with all three of them. So I put running back at one. I put linebacker close second as positions I feel are absolutely strengths and fine. And I put quarterback third because Rocco's going to be healthy and whole. I don't think he's going to be anything but exactly what you expect him to be, and that will be good enough.
Andy, I like your list, but I'll give you a position that I think you missed in the comfort level. Well, first of all, let me get back to your running back comment. They're 3D, no doubt about it. Cam Wallace as a number four is not a bad number four and a bit of an insurance policy.
They can absorb injuries there.
Yes. The other position I think I feel really good about is tight end. And this team has historically been good there and deep. They're going to be good and deep again.
They are a maybe fine with me. I don't feel that there's enough relevant, stable production that we know about, either from transfer or what Penn State had in the stable. They do have a bunch of them. They have a lot of them, Jimmy. They're a maybe for me. They are maybe fine. I don't feel right now, I don't feel like I've seen enough to know that they have anything approaching an elite weapon. And I think for this offense to be at its humming best, they're going to need a little bit of eliteness from a tight end. There's options and there's possibility, but to me, it's still a maybe. Although it is a position of depth and strength, I haven't seen enough to put them up in the, yeah, I can say that comfortably category. They're close, but I put them in the maybe fine, and I understand where you're coming from.
I think we might be a little bit spoiled by Tyler Warren, who's an absolute unicorn. And I think between, there is depth, but I think there's also elite at the top. I think Brommer, he's a monster. He's huge. I think Rappelier, we saw late in the year when Terry Smith seemed to make more use of him.
Got some nuggets.
Just as a last thought, again, from this talking to Vabu the other night, when he gave his hammer nail thing, he talked about tackling Brommer. Well, that one's a little bit different. We need multiple hammers when it comes time to tackling him. So I thought that was a very interesting take. All right, we've been going mostly at places where we're comfortable. I'm giving you the places where I'm a bit uncomfortable. The defensive line, Andy, and the offensive line, they're spending a lot of time really talking it up. I want to see that. I see the pieces there. I still think, you and I had this discussion. I think Donka will be the right tackle. Could redshirt freshman Malachi be the guy at left tackle? I think that's the big question mark there. If he can, I think the offensive line could be good. The defensive line, as you alluded to earlier, Andy, they're going to be big. But are they going to be good?
So I agree with you. I put the offensive line actually in the – I think they're maybe fine. I like the right side. I think the right side's got some merit. I think the center position will be a pleasant surprise. It's going to be about the left side. And your concerns – and worries about this, they certainly have merit. I see a little more half full with the O-line. The D-line, particularly interior, you'd say, okay, take the D-line. Which of these two, interior, a little less concerned, but definitely have question marks and concerns. The defensive end position, yay. That is, if that position manifests itself for this Penn State team as not part of a problem. It doesn't have to be the solution, but it's not part of a problem. Good, not great. Getting by, doing enough. That, I think, could be good enough. But man, oh man, oh man, right now, whoo, they go definitely into the I don't feel good. They're the top of my don't feel good list, defensive line. At the top of the defensive line would be the DNs. And then second would be the wide receivers, and I don't want to talk about them.
Okay. Well, I will acquiesce to you on that, Andy. We won't talk wide receiver. But with the defensive line, I'm looking at it just a little bit different. I think, again, the interior, I have more question marks there. But with right. that said, I think it's if they fail – you may lose, give up 3 or 4 yards, you know, on third and short. On the edge, though, if they don't set the edge, the defensive ends,
trouble.
You got major trouble. If you're not getting any pressure on the quarterback,
yep.
you're in trouble. So that is just a more important position. It could hurt you more if they don't perform, Andy.
I don't think this has to be a sack laden defense. With what you have talent wise, I think pocket impact is going to be a greater measuring stick. That they'll get some sacks, but they're not going to be known for being a sack monster defense. But can they consistently set an edge and provide some pocket impact from the outside in, to where, which I might differ with you. I think the interior could end up being a strength because they're going to be big and they're going to be very straight line. Get a little bit of pocket impact from the outside, make it become more about what's going on the inside. That's, I think, a solution for Penn State. But, man, it's full of like, oh, well, I don't really know and I'm not sure, and there's a whole lot of it. So, but I do think the defensive line has cover. I think they have cover at the linebacker position, and I think the safeties – in the end, I think the dark horse that could be a really impactful group for this team, the biggest dark horse in my book are the safeties. I think they could end up being a hammer group for this. I mean, you start with Marcus Neal, the transfer from ISU. I think he's NFL draftable. Don't forget, Zion Tracy is a nickel. That guy's a weapon. That is a weapon at the nickel. So I think the sleeping monster of this defense isn't going to be up front. It's going to be – the linebackers will be solid. It's going to be on the back end coming from the safeties.
And I like that you like the safeties. I think that that's a position, again, that I typically really love. But the cornerbacks also. You have a Davian Collins who played a lot last year. Darius Dixon played a lot as a true freshman, Andy. And they're both returning. So – there's a comfort level there. You pointed out the safeties. I think the linebackers will be good.
They're
so the back end of the defense looks pretty solid. All right, Andy. I think we're done. I think it was a fun show, just like I predicted. All right, that's it. Make sure you join us next time on the Keystone Kickoff Show.
Welcome to the new HVU Insider. Penn State football's fan scouting platform providing exclusive recruiting intel. The first of its kind platform giving Penn State fans an inside look at how the Nittany Lions identify, evaluate, and recruit the next generation of talent. Led by Mike V, empowered by Penn State students. It's a new era of Penn State football under Coach Matt Campbell. You can sign up at happyvalleyunited.com. It's fast and free.